1280 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, The Soundbite. Call the show at 222-1180, *1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 30th of September.
You've been drinking again?
Still, not again. Still. I'm Nick Francesco.
You sure?
You're pretty sure, yeah. I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. You are listening
rough
to the...
Night?
I don't know. I'm still in it, apparently.
You haven't woken up from it yet.
You won't have a hangover if you don't stop drinking. I've always believed in it.
I actually got a hangover once before I was done drinking, before the night was over. I got to quit.
My problem with drinking is that I get the hangover as I'm drinking.
Yeah.
I'm never hungover the next day, but if I have like two beers, I suddenly get this headache and I can't go on anymore. I can't go on. Microsoft said on Thursday it plans to keep selling its Windows XP operating system. This is good news for, everybody. Until the end of June 2008, delaying a scheduled transition to its newer Windows Vista software by 5 months. Microsoft introduced Windows Vista in January with the plan to phase out sales of its predecessor, Windows XP, by January 30th, 2008. Microsoft said it decided to extend XP sales in response to feedback from customers and manufacturers who said that Vista stunk on... Who said there were customers who still wanted to buy the older operating system. I'm sorry, I misread that. I'll read that again. Some customers have voiced displeasure with Vista due to a lack of compatibility with existing software programs and devices. Vista doesn't work with anything, right? The hardware requirements needed to run Vista are also a significant upgrade for many older computers. Let me translate that for you. Whatever system you're running, it's not big enough. Mm-hmm. The company downplayed any dissatisfaction with Vista, saying it's the fastest-selling operating system in the history of Microsoft.
Because they're not selling the old one very well.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Every machine you buy, you get Vista whether you want it or not. So, yeah, and Microsoft loves this. They make you buy Vista. You buy Vista with the system.
Yep.
Right? Then you turn around and buy XP to replace it with.
Yep.
They win.
Double sale.
Twice.
Well, this is maybe reaffirm to that gentleman that accused me of lying to him and selling something illegal. Hello, the company, because he was told by the big box and a gentleman overseas that, no, we're selling something illegally because they don't make XP anymore. It's only Vista. No, it's only because that big company only had Vista in their warehouse and they're trying to unload it.
Right. Yeah, now, and the other thing about Vista sales is that's Microsoft reporting how many they've sold, not how many Vistas have actually been bought by people.
Right.
Everyone goes out the door with a machine, but how many of those machines are still sitting on the shelves? That's first.
Yeah.
And secondly, how many people are actually using Vista? I almost brought a laptop from work today that has Vista on it, but I truly don't yet know enough, and it just... We've got this utterly super fast laptop.
We've got a machine at work. You know, we've set it up only because we've got to learn it. And it's a big pain in the butt. I mean...
Everything's different. Everything moved.
For no unknown reason, they switched things around. So if you were comfortable with things in a certain place under XP, forget it. You've got to relearn it because they've changed it and the whole looks and everything else and... It's very confusing and frustrating for especially some folks that, say, had an XP box. They're relatively new to computers.
Right.
And say that one died. And now all of a sudden they're switching over and they were told they got to go to Vista.
Right.
Now they got to turn around and relearn everything.
Yep. Yeah. You know what? I forget what it was that I was trying to do the other day. But under XP, it would have taken me like 4 clicks.
Mm-hmm.
It took me 15 minutes to find it under Vista.
Oh, yeah.
It's
I need an earth.
All right, we're going to go to the phones. Our first caller of the day, Paul from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Paul. What's your question?
Well, I spoke to you fellows about 3 weeks ago. I was whining because I had purchased a new Dell laptop, and I couldn't use it outside. I'm a writer. I just couldn't see anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was watching 60 Minutes. I think it's the same night we talked, and there's some multi-billionaire who's making computers to give away to kids.
Yep, the one laptop per child.
Yeah, right. And the commentator indicated that he had come up with something that allows the thing to be used in direct sunlight. And I wonder if you know anything about that.
Yeah, if you go to laptop.org, which is of course, a great name, you will see the one laptop per child laptop. And what it is, the design of it is pretty interesting. The screen, it's actually a dual screen, sort of, and you flip a switch, I guess. I haven't seen one myself yet.
Mm.
You flip a switch, and it either is a regular screen that's lit up from the back, so you use it indoors, or it the light goes off and it changes something, and you can use it outdoors. It's designed for ambient light, which generally speaking means outdoors. It's a pretty neat little thing. It's going to cost actually $189.
Well,
and their website still says $100 laptop.
I mean, it's a chunk of change, but still.
Well, there are several companies that make hoods you can put over the top of it. And there's links to that.
I bought one of those things, and I felt like it was Matthew Brady photographing the Civil War. You know, it's silly. It turns the thing around. It was windy, and it wanted to blow away. And there's also a plastic film or screen or something that I paid. I don't know.
Yeah, you can put a real high polarization filter on it, so it only shines light the one way you're looking at it.
Well, I'll go to the site you mentioned, and then perhaps I can, for the rest of the season, right outside.
There you go.
Well, that's the way that works. And also, they're having a give one, get one program. And what that means is sometime in November, and I'll find out more information about it. I've got it somewhere. It's XO something. I don't remember. But what they're doing is in November for a week or so, you'll be able to buy one. You'll be able to get one if you buy two. The idea is you buy two. One goes to a needy child in a foreign country, and the other one comes to you.
Okay, that's not a bad deal.
That's not a bad deal at all. They're $189 a piece, so for under $400.
Have they actually started shipping them yet? They're still,
No, there are a couple of countries that are actually using them at the moment.
Oh, these things are already in use?
Yeah, well, yes and no. They're in use in the beta program right now.
I see.
So they're out there, but...
follow that down.
There's also issues that are similar issues in the marine environment. I just found a company called Argonaut that sells a monitor designed for using on boats, for fish finders and things like that. And because of the direct sunlight glare on, especially worse on the water. So I'll have a link to them in our show notes shortly too.
Okay, wonderful. One further point. I think everything you've said about Vista is absolutely correct. It's a wonder they don't have their dealers wear masks and carry guns when they sell the damn thing. Really. It's just wrong. We didn't need it. Nobody wanted it, as far as I know.
The Microsoft shareholders wanted it.
Yeah, and Gates wanted it. He needs more money.
It's the shareholders. It's all about the shareholders. Microsoft doesn't make money if you don't buy new products, so they have to keep coming up with new products.
It's crazy.
Yep. And by the way, that's xogiving.org. If you go to xogiving.org, you can get. They're going to do it. They're going to start November 12th, but you can sign up to get an email reminder, and so you'll get an XO, and they'll get an XO. And I so desperately want one. I realize that in terms of a laptop, it's going to be older and slower and everything else, but I'm really looking forward to picking one up. All right, thanks a lot. I appreciate that. Our next caller is Marianne on a cell phone. I think we've opened up the floodgates about XP versus Vista. Marianne, what's up?
Hi, my question was just very simple. I just bought a new machine, and all I could find was Vista. And I haven't really had any problems with it other than compatibility issues, like my kids' games I couldn't reinstall.
Right.
One of my printers, I had a Lexmark printer. They didn't have a driver for it. the HP I had to install a new driver. I had to find one.
Right.
Would you suggest me, you know, going to a shop and having somebody uninstall Vista and reinstall XP on it?
Well, if it's not doing what you need it to do, then yes. I'm sorry, that's got to be my answer. If it's doing what you need it to do now that you've spent all this time at it, then hang on to it. But if your kids really need the games, and particularly, you know, their educational games or whatever.
No, they're not. No. I was just thinking in terms of, are they ever going to fix it so that it's compatible with other things?
Well, see, the problem is it's not really Microsoft. Well, it sort of is. It's not really Microsoft's fault. It's all the third-party programs that they need to write updated drivers. And for many cases, those companies aren't going
worth it.
Right, they're not going to write a driver for an old printer. They want you to buy a new printer that already has Vista support in it.
Oh, that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
From their point of view,
they're not going to spend the man hours doing, developing stuff for old stuff when they're looking to support current stuff and future stuff.
Yeah, and a lot of people end up keeping an old machine lying around to run older programs just because of this. It's not an uncommon occurrence.
Okay. All right. So then I should just probably hang on to it and hope I
can. Yeah, in the long run, you're gonna need it anyway, because they're going to stop selling XP. New things are going to come out that don't run on XP. We're just in that painful transition phase.
That's what I thought. I just wanted some confirmation.
There you go.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Marianne.
But I still got a feeling, though, they're saying June, but I'll bet you it's going to be longer than that.
Yeah, they'll extend it again when we get close to that.
Traditionally, it's been 2 years. Microsoft tried to shorten that to 1 year, and now they've gone 18 months. I think we're going to end up with 2 years by the time it's
Like we said before, well, let me put it this way to you. As far as this college of business,
yep.
How fast are you switching over everything to Vista?
We're not. We have proprietary programs as well as certain high-end statistical packages and things like that that simply don't have Vista compatibility yet.
Yeah.
They don't run.
And that's why a lot of folks are coming, and they don't need it.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. It is 19 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites.
I should mention we did a little more searching on the sunlight, direct sunlight screens. HP has a product they call Brightview, and many of their laptops have it, and it's designed for direct sunlight as well.
Right. Paul, of course, already has his Dell laptop, so unless they let him return it, he's pretty well got what he's getting. Apple released 6 updates for its products on Thursday, fixing 10 security issues, which I think puts paid to all of you people who say there are no security issues with Apple. Fixing 10 security issues in its 3-month-old mobile phone and a number of performance and stability problems with its iWork productivity applications, iTunes for Windows, and iWeb. I bet. The update to the iPhone, which brings the device's firmware up to version 1.1.1, fixes 7 flaws in the mobile Safari web browser that ships with the device, as well as 2 mail vulnerabilities and a Bluetooth security issue. Only the Bluetooth security issue appears to allow a remote compromise. The other flaws could lead to information disclosure or allow cross-site scripting attacks, which is a remote compromise. Apple stressed that the update was only available through iTunes, which is normally set to check for updates only once a week. The automatic update process may take up to a week, depending on the day that iTunes checks for updates, the company stated in its advisory. You may manually obtain the update via the Check for Update button within iTunes. After doing this, the update can be applied when your iPhone is docked to your computer. Hardware hackers worldwide have kept up a sustained effort this summer to crack the iPhone. Several serious vulnerabilities have been found in software included with the device, and hackers have discovered ways to get non-Apple software to install and run on the iPhone. In August, a college student, who goes to RIT, and a group of hackers announced separate ways of modifying the iPhone to allow other cellular carriers to be used rather than AT&T. So, Apple warned in the ClickWrap agreement accompanying Thursday's patch that the software fix would likely break phones that had been modified. Yeah. It's not clear if the anti-modification measure is an intended feature or accidental. The updates, The updates for iWork correct performance issues with the 3 applications that make up Apple's productivity suite, Pages, Numbers, and Keynote. The company also released firmware fixes for its Intel system. So if you are one of those people who only lets iTunes update on its own schedule and you have an iPhone, you may have a problem. Update today.
Yeah, there was a lot of consternation and grumbling around the net about the iPhone firmware breaking hacks. And it seems to go a little farther than that. It doesn't just break the hack. It appears to break the phone, so you can't restore the original firmware and get back an original working phone.
Mm. Oh, that's lovely.
Whether that's intentional or not is another question.
Yeah.
Not to me. All right.
Well, it is a pretty low-level hack, and you're rewriting the firmware yourself and opening it up. And one of the problem is even when you unlock it in the U.S., it only means you can go from AT&T to T-Mobile.
Right.
Because those are the only two GSM companies in America.
Right. I'm still waiting for the open MoCo. Our next caller is Ron from Ontario. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. Great show. Thank you. You're welcome. Talked to you all probably about a month and a half or two back regarding Thunderbird. And at the time, I told you I was having a font problem.
Yeah?
And I was incorrect in that concept of font.
Ah.
Okay. It's not actually the font that's the problem. It's actually overwriting the lines in the window that tells you what the emails are. So that if you've got several new emails or even old ones, just merge over the top of each other. Unless I've got Word running in the background.
And then it works.
But sometimes that is a font problem. It's not caching it properly, or it's a corrupt font.
There are a couple of rendering issues with Firefox. If you are one of those people who has written your code using all of Microsoft's tools to create web code...
No, I've been fortunate that I haven't had to write my own code for this.
Well, I'm saying whoever did.
Oh.
If they used all the Microsoft tools, there's a lot of lazy programming that goes on there, and anybody worth their salt as a programmer on the web knows that there are a dozen or two instances where you have to use multiple configurations depending on which browser is coming to you. And if you don't do that, somebody gets a good image and somebody gets a lousy image. For example, I did that last week. On my door, I have a screen from a laptop. The laptop's hidden behind the door that continually shows where all of my technicians are. And those who are not working are grayed out, so that somebody doesn't have to really look for them. They're just grayed out. Well, the gray out a picture style is different for Firefox and Internet Explorer. So I have to test. My code has to test to see which version of the software is being used by the user. And so if I don't do that, half the people, certainly my door will be fine. But if somebody looked at it with their own code, they would not see the correct thing. And right. So I think that's kind of what's happening here.
Right. Well, I've downloaded the Thunderbird and the updates from their site. So
what operating system are you running under?
XP Pro.
I'm finding this is a really common problem in all the different flavors of Unix.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. And in there, it often is a font problem. But the thing he's talking about is actually a space and rendering problem.
Yeah, someone told me that there was a name for it when HTML, that they had called it before, where the lines overwrite each other.
Yeah, I can't think of what it's called, but it's in there somewhere. Configuring the size.
Yeah, the font scaling, yeah. Have you changed the default size and font in your listings?
Yeah, I've played with that several times, going back and forth.
I've seen problems where if you change it, the default is Times New Roman 12, and you make it, Arial 14, it doesn't work.
Right.
But if you go back to Times New Roman 12, it does work.
I went back to the default on everything.
Yeah. I'm sorry I don't have an answer for you. The problem really is at the other end. We have to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 31 minutes after the hour. You are listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 33 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Microsoft confirmed that the Windows XP users who repair the operating system cannot update their PCs with the latest patches because of a file included with the stealth update pushed out to machines earlier this summer. Remember we talked about that? Microsoft did an update to the machine that whether or not you had updates turned off or on, or whether you had it, you know, say, always ask me before you install an update, It just happened. And people are still a little confused as to how that could be. Questioning who owns the machine. When an XP repair CD is used, it replaces all system files, including Windows Update, on your machine with older versions of those files and restores the registry. The problem is the latest version of Windows Update includes a new file that is not originally present in Windows XP. Therefore, after the repair install of the OS, that file, WUPS2.bll, remains on the system, but its registry entries are missing. This mismatch causes updates to fail. The patch installation failures have been tested on a number of machines that have been restored by an in-place reinstall. We've talked about how to do that. The root of the problem is that 7 DLLs from the latest revision to Windows Update, not just one, failed to register themselves with XP. Microsoft could not provide an explanation for the discrepancy between the claims. So I don't quite know what we're going to do about this, but it's very clearly true that the Windows Update means you cannot restore to an older version if there is a problem. You're pretty well, what's the word I'm looking for? Screwed.
Well, then there was this sneaky mess that Microsoft is installing updates on your computer without your knowledge, without telling you, even if you have auto update turned off.
Yep. And then let me see, it's kind of an interesting problem, particularly for those of us who are involved in any way with things like HIPAA.
Right.
Patient confidentiality and things like that. If Microsoft can just reach into our machines anytime they want and do anything they want, how can any Windows machine ever be considered HIPAA compliant?
Right. And the fact that Microsoft can implies that anyone could.
Yes, exactly. I cannot see that there's any reason any longer to trust XP or, in fact, any version of Windows when pretty much anybody on Earth. Well, we've talked about this before. The end user license agreement for Windows
Media Player. Yeah, is there something buried in there that says they can do this?
Well, in the Windows Media Player, it actually says Microsoft reserves the right to rummage, I'm not using the technical term, rummage around inside your machine to see if you've stolen anything. Yeah. And they reserve the right to allow third parties to do the same. Nah, that was the day I first installed Linux on my computer. I was done at that point. There just was no way I was playing that game with them. All right, we're back.
Well, for our previous caller, I found something that may help. Windows XP has a clear type tuner as part of the PowerToy package, and that changes how fonts are rendered. And it may make it look better, may make it look worse, but something to try, and there's a link in our link list.
Right, but it's not the rendering of the fonts, it's the rendering of the position of the fonts on the screen.
But this will change how they're rendered, so maybe it'll look better.
That's true.
Maybe.
Maybe, then again, maybe not. Our next caller is John from Ontario. Welcome, John, what's your question?
Hi, guys. I put an external hard drive on my system to use as a backup.
Yep.
And I have this annoying little problem that if I have to reboot the system, I get a disk error because it goes there first. And obviously, there's no operating system on it.
Right.
So I have to disconnect it, Control-Alt-Delete, and then everything boots up again. And I can't figure out a way to change the boot order because if I go to boot it up with the system, with the drive disconnected, it doesn't see it in the BIOS.
Did you go into the BIOS?
The BIOS should have something called removable drives, and that should be below your hard drive.
Well, take it out.
The problem there is if you want to boot from a floppy, sometimes that's considered a removable drive.
Right. Yeah, but you can always change that on the fly. What you can do is, in a lot of the BIOS, just go in, and in the BIOS on boot order, just have the hard drive, your main hard drive, as the boot, and nothing else.
Okay.
And just change to that, or you can change, if it requires at least two, which sometimes they do, have your hard drive as the first one, your CD-ROM is the second one. Because it's finding another hard drive, that's why it's trying to go to that first.
Okay.
I usually put the CD-ROM first so I can boot diagnostic disks and then the hard drive.
Yeah. But for when I for clients, quite often, they sit there and they see that and it's like, what's wrong with it? I just put it to the hard drive. If it needs to be changed, you can always do that in the BIOS. It takes you 2 seconds.
And some of the BIOSes, you hit like F2 to enter BIOS. You hit like F12 and you get a boot order.
Yep.
So on that single boot, you can change the boot order if you do need the boot
after the BIOS. You got to hit delete to get into the BIOS.
All right.
I'll give that a shot. Thanks.
All right. Thanks.
Good luck.
I still have that problem on my Linux box. I have moved. We had this discussion before. If I reboot the machine or boot the machine with anything plugged into the USB ports, it hangs.
Oh, yeah.
I have gone in and made sure that bootable drives is the absolute last thing on the menu. After my main hard drive, my CD-ROM drive, nothing, and bootable, and it still goes to bootable first. All right, we have to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. What is this song?
You don't know. It's just something cute and pastoral.
Don't do me like that.
We're not allowed to pick our own music anymore. We have to leave it as what they pick for us. Because this music is hip.
It's not even hip replaced. A researcher warned this week that a critical flaw in America Online's instant messenger likely continues to pose a threat, despite a server-side fix designed to filter out possible attacks. The flaw, described in an advisory posted on Tuesday by Core Security Technologies, allows attackers to remotely execute code or interject HTML and JavaScript into Internet Explorer. AOL considers the bug to be extremely critical, according to Core's advisory, and expedited a server-side patch to filter out attacks. The filtering, however, can be fooled using obfuscated code, according to Aviv Roth, a researcher who also works for web security firm FinGen. I've tested the proof-of-concept code, which I provided to AOL against the patched version, Raff wrote. While the latest beta version seems to filter my proof-of-concept code, I've been able to change my code a little and successfully exploited the vulnerability. Again, the problem with AOL's patch is that they filter specific tags and attributes instead of fixing the main cause of the vulnerability, which is locking down the local zone of their client's web browser control. Here's the deal. Until the patch is released in mid-October, computer users should avoid using AOL's Instant Messenger, also known as AIM, until the latest update is released. This is serious, it is dangerous, and if you're using AOL's Instant Messenger, you are vulnerable. It's that simple.
What about the third parties like Adium or that use the AOL network? Is it the network or just the software?
It's the software letting code through.
So if you were using a third-party client, it would also be vulnerable.
Yes, anything that goes to the AOL network.
Ouch.
Yep-er. That's how that works. Our next caller is Marty from Niagara Falls. Slowly we turn to Marty. How are you, Marty?
Hey, good morning, guys. Talked to you a few times before. I got my new Apple, and it's lovely, but I have an old Windows machine. It actually started out in Windows 95 and now has Windows 98, but it seems to be corrupt because it won't start.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a copy of Ubuntu, and I was going to try to install that, but because the machine won't come up, it won't go.
Well, now, when you say it won't come up, if you turn it on, you don't even get accounting memory and doing all of that stuff?
Oh, yeah, it does all that. It'll get halfway through loading Windows, and then something's corrupted in it.
Okay. Well, you don't have to worry about that. Yeah. With Ubuntu, you only have to boot with the CD in the drive. Now, again, you have to make sure that the BIOS is set to boot from the from the CD-ROM drive first. But once you've done that, you just turn the machine on, stick that thing in the drive, close it before it finishes counting up memory, which with a 95 machine is about 10 minutes. And then it will immediately load Ubuntu itself. Now, that's going to be very slow the first time because it's really loading it off of the CD, and we know how slow a CD is compared to a hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be very patient. But once you're done with that, there'll be an icon on the desktop that says install. And if you double-click that, it will install Ubuntu on that machine. And unless there's something physically wrong with the hard drive, when you're done, you'll have a fully bootable Ubuntu distribution on your machine.
Okay, but like the old version of Windows and stuff, that wouldn't affect it?
No, it wipes the hard drive.
Oh, okay, so anything that's on there is gone?
Right, you get the same kind of choices you get everywhere else nowadays. You know, you want to add Ubuntu. There's already, it'll come up and say, oh, there's already an operating system. Do you want to add Ubuntu to that, or you just want to wipe it all out and use Ubuntu completely, and it'll, and you just say, I want to wipe it out, and you're on your way. That's not quite the language, but you know what
yeah.
I mean.
All right. Yeah, just because it gets halfway through loading, and I can't go any farther. But
right, but you don't care about that. You want to get it before that. You want to have the CD in the drive before Windows boots.
So just as you start it up, just shove the drive in.
You got it.
Okay.
What I found works, and it may not be a problem on an older machine like yours, but what I found also works is while the machine's on, I put that CD in the drive because I, you know, the power is there and I can put it in. Then I reboot and close the door while it's rebooting, and right. Of course now it's ready to go.
Yeah, it's old, but it still runs fine. You know,
yeah,
it did run fine.
Else right, and as long as you're willing to be patient, not because of Ubuntu, but because of the slowness of the machine itself, you'll be fine. It's a great way to play around with Linux and learn it.
Well, that's it. With the Apple now, I can do something with the machine, and if I break it completely,
yeah, who cares?
Doesn't matter.
Right, exactly.
There you go. That's the most.
That's kind of freeing that way, isn't it? All right. Thanks, Marty. We're going to take another quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 49 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 53 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Now, normally, at this time, we would be presenting Story Hour with Uncle Dave, but today, unfortunately, Uncle Dave has been so crotchety that he just sits in his rocking chair practicing his rude Italian street gestures.
Let's go to the call.
So we're going to the calls. Back to the calls because Uncle Dave has suggested that we go back to the calls. Exactly. All right, our next caller is Scott from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Scott. Say thank you to Uncle Dave and tell us your question.
Hi, I've got a question. My daughter wants a laptop, and we've done a little research, but as you know, it's very confusing out there.
Yep.
And looking for some recommendations. She's kind of looking at that Gateway with the tablet with the stylus.
Yep.
And I see good things and bad things. Any comments on an entry level? She's a very good student. She does a lot of writing, and she wants to be able to do it. You know, not just in front of her PC. So.
Right. Well, you can't use the tablet for writing.
You can.
Well, it's the handwriting recognition. Don't you get like a bitmap image of your handwriting? It doesn't actually
convert it to text. No, you can convert it to text.
It converts it.
It's just not great. You can train it. She could certainly do that, and it would be handwriting. But it's going to be slower than typing if she's any kind of decent typist.
Okay.
In terms of laptop, it's a great idea it's a great solution looking for a problem. In certain places where somebody has crafted, for example, in the medical industry where they've crafted screens where you just click and select a bunch of things, carrying around a tablet, it's a great idea. But for general all-purpose computing, I have a tablet. Well, work owns a tablet that I use. So I have a tablet, and frankly, I almost never use it in tablet mode, unless I'm drawing network diagrams.
You're right. It's really great for artists who want free-form graphic sketching.
Right. But for day-to-day use, not a big deal to me. Now, on the other hand, every student should have a laptop. I honestly believe every student should have a laptop. You can carry it to class. You can do all this other good stuff with it. Make sure it gets locked down to a desktop when she's not using it. Nothing walks faster than a laptop.
I've even heard of some schools and specifically some professors that don't let laptops in the room because of the clickety-clickety of the keys.
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah?
But they're getting fewer and farther between.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of what laptop, I'm not a big fan of Gateway. I'm becoming less a big fan of Dell. But I realize it doesn't leave you with a lot. I really like the Lenovo's. I like the Toshibas, but I haven't had good.
I like the Macs.
Haven't had good tech support with them.
I would have never guessed.
Yeah, Acers are nice. The Macs are very nice. So any of those is a good laptop. Make sure that one of the things she gets is something called that used to be called a Kensington lock, and now I believe is mostly just called a laptop lock, so that she can lock it to some unmovable object in her room.
As opposed to replacing this every year or every 2 years. Is there requirements as far as memory and hard drive? Again, we're not doing big graphics. The internet capability is really not something we're looking at right now.
Well, if you're going to go with Windows XP, you want to get at least a gig of memory. I believe for a laptop, it's going to be 160 gig hard drive. Try to get it with the onboard graphics so it doesn't take away from the memory. You can usually get them with 128
memory. Dedicated memory, not shared memory, yeah. And you can almost always increase the memory on a laptop.
Right.
You can usually replace the hard drive on a laptop. It's the processor that you can't increase, and that's where newer demanding programs would be needed.
A high-end, a 2 gigahertz, 1.6 gigahertz, I guess, processor. 2 gigs of RAM is my recommendation. Dedicated video. Everything else is negotiable, and everything else is...
Was that HP we looked up earlier?
HP
has a 20-inch laptop for $3,000, and it weighs 15 pounds.
Yeah, it's not really a laptop. But now, for example, Fujitsu has a new laptop. And in fact, Dell used to do this. I don't know if they still do. You could replace the CD-ROM drive or the DVD drive with another battery. So you can swap them in and out, right? So if you're going to be, backing up or whatever you're doing or installing software, you can put in the drive. Otherwise, you put in another battery, and then you can carry the thing around for 6 to 8 hours without having to recharge it. So yes, those are the kind of things to look at.
Okay, one last question. I'm not sure it's relative, but I know that laptops, I rarely leave the docking station, but... The durability issue, is it worth it to look at some of these hard cased or the...
Yeah, Fujitsu makes a thing called a tough book, which really is.
But that was Panasonic.
I'm sorry, Panasonic makes that. Fujitsu makes one that's got a different
heavy
title.
Construction where you're going to be throwing it around all the time.
Any laptop that she takes reasonable care of should be fine. We're going to take a break. We will be back on the other side of whatever's coming next. The other side of the news with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, the great and mighty Rob Linton, who's doing his utmost to desperately try to keep us on the straight and narrow today, although clearly he's not up to the task today. We're just way out of control. I'm Nick Francesco. When we come back, we will have a very special guest. We will have Jeanette Simon from IMDi. We'll find out how that's pronounced when we come back. It is 59 minutes after the hour. So stay tuned. We will be back with the greatest computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm David, right?
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, it's Sound Bites. We have a very special guest with us today. Jeanette, are you on the line?
Yes, I sure am.
I don't know how to pronounce your last name. Is it Simon or...
It's Simon.
All right. We have Jeanette Simon from...
it's one of those simple names.
Well, S-Y-M-O-N could have been Simmons, could have been Simons. I didn't want to make the mistake, although I suppose she would have corrected me. And
oh, no, I would have answered anything at all.
Okay. Well, Smiley, how are you? Jeanette is the brains behind a company called IMDi. It's probably IMDi now, right?
Yeah, that one I have to correct you on, IMDi.com.
See, I knew I'd get one of them wrong. It's the first social networking site for kids 8 to 14. She's also an expert on the critical issue of child internet safety. And we are delighted to welcome you to Soundbites. Why don't you tell us a little bit about IMDi itself?
Well, we started IMDi actually almost 2 years ago now when my kids came home. And they were 7 and 9 and said, Mom, I want a MySpace page.
Yeah.
The fear.
Yeah, there should have been a quick moment of shuddering.
And you know what I got frightened of? Was not predators, none of that was, oh, my God, my 9-year-old son has these incredibly, let's say, interesting perspectives on the world.
Yeah.
And wanted to publish. 10 years, 20 years, he's going to college, he's getting a job. People, I really don't want them to know what his view of the world was when he was a kid.
Right.
So panic set in. I did what, you know, any self-respecting nerd would do, and I set up a social network in the closet at home. And my kids were young enough and naive enough that they and their friends could social network with each other, share with grandma and grandpa, and they thought they were sharing with the world.
Right.
And the more we studied it, the more we said, hey, you know what the real thing is? The kids that age suffer from two things. One is they, no matter how hard you try to tell them to filter what they're thinking, they can't. Mm-hmm. They don't know appropriate versus inappropriate at the detail level we need them to. And right. They also, if you ask the kid that age, are you sharing with the world? They'll say, yeah, everybody in my class and everybody on my soccer team and my grandparents. And so what we found was two things. One is we could give them the full experience of social networking while protecting them, while keeping their circle of friends closed so that they wouldn't get themselves in trouble down the road. And then the other thing is we have to find a way for really lazy parents, just a lazy parent, to make sure their kids are safe. I'm not going to sit there every minute my kid's on the computer and watch him. I know that's what they say we're supposed to do, but I've got a lot more to do, and I'm not going to do it. So we give parents a way to know what their kids are doing, to be comfortable with it, to monitor it without being in their face every minute. So, you know, we took a lot of the things that the kids love about social networking and also them protecting them, and really importantly, keeping the parents in the loop.
Especially since the kids are the ones usually teaching the parents how to do it.
Yeah, right. Because we hear a lot of parents say, well, I don't know computers. Well, my biggest thing is I keep telling, you know, parents in there, one, get it out of the room, get it down in a public area. And the last I knew, you sitting down with your kid and maybe having them, you know, teach you something was called quality time.
Right.
You know, and I think what you're promoting here is a good reason for parents to sit down with their kids, like you say, and just have that quality time.
Right. And for those of us who are listening in, imbe.com, imbe.com, there are three different sign-ups. There's the kid sign-up, there's the parent sign-up, and there's the teacher sign-up. So you've seriously thought about this and managed to hit all three of the important groups here, Jeanette.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, we've really worked hard to make it so that it's a place for the kids, but that we're tying in the people that need to be a part of what their online experience is.
Right. Now, kids can create their own little groups, like if you and five of your kid and five of their friends want to get together and form their own little group, they could do that?
Exactly. They can form groups. They can create their own content, their own videos, their own pictures, their blogs. They can make trading cards. They can create a way to share that with their friends. So they share their stuff with their friends, and they can also create group content with their friends. And we find that groups really kind of go along the lines of classes or like scout groups or sports teams. They tend to be very physical in terms of the kids that they know that they want to join groups with.
Right.
Which is really different than the adults that really want this kind of virtual open space.
Right. So take me through the sign-up process. Most of our people listening are parents.
The first thing is that either a parent or a kid can start the sign-up. And, you know, as you say, you click on I'm a parent or you click on I'm a kid.
Right.
No kid can share or publish any information until a parent authorizes them. And we give parents several ways to authorize themselves. They can enter a credit card number, which we never use and never charge, but it's a good way to verify that it is the parent and they have the card and the information.
Right,
so
right.
We do that, or they can call our offices or fax the information. But we want to confirm that every single kid online has a parent who's gone through saying, I am this kid's parent. And then we give the parent information. We give them reports. It's very passive. It's into their email, so they don't have to go overboard, but they can always see what's going on.
Right.
So the parent can go, I'm a parent, then they can create their kid account, or the other way. You know, when the kids hear about it at school, they often want to start it. When the parents hear about it first, they want to start it. But
right.
Again, it's got to have both, because no matter how much we
right.
want to be passive, you've got to engage with what the kid is doing.
So you're keeping it really, truly a safe area for kids to be, and not these, you know, other lurkers and all this other junk that's out there that sickens us all, trying to sneak in and, you know, with false identities. I love the idea that you're asking for the credit card or literally talking to a parent. I mean, that's
yeah,
really strong.
Well, thank you. You know, one of the funniest ones is that, you know, as you say, kids are teaching the parents. One of
yeah.
the things we find is the kid calls to authenticate as the parent, and they go, but my mom's sitting right here. She just doesn't use the computer. You know, it's like, no, we really
yeah.
have to talk to your mom.
Hi, I'm an adult, and I'd really like an account, please.
Now, first, before we go too much farther, we've mentioned credit card twice, so I think you better tell us how much all this costs.
Absolutely nothing. You know, what we found is that because social networking is free in the adult-oriented spaces, if we didn't make it free within the kids' domain,
right.
that kids will end up on the adult sites. So
right.
it's 100% free. We use the credit card only to authorize who you are. We never bill it.
Right. And let me personally thank you for that. Now, it says 8 to 14, but I suspect you'll take them a little younger, a little older.
Absolutely. You know, what we find is much younger than fourth grade, most kids aren't able to sit there and type and communicate really effectively.
Right.
So we find some third graders and younger, especially if they have siblings, but kind of the sweet spot starting at fourth grade up through middle school.
Right. Well, let me personally thank you for this site. My daughter has been bugging me for months. To create this sort of site for her and her friends. And honestly, I'm about halfway through designing it, and I'm just delighted to think that I can stop that and stop writing code and just sign my kid up and all her friends up for this and back away, because this thing is gigantic. It's got everything that kids want and everything that parents want their kids to have and nothing that they don't want their kids to have.
Make it actually a safe environment.
I'm very, very impressed about this. Again, it's imbe.com, I-M-B-E-E.
We'll have a link up for the folks on our website.
Right. And now this is, how many people are signed up on this already?
It's about 50,000 right now, about 50,000 kids.
Wow.
Growing.
Wow.
It's growing.
Yeah, take a look at this site. It's everything your kid could want. If I were a 13-year-old kid, I'd be drooling. This is phenomenal. You can write your own blog. You can meet with your friends. You can put up your own audio and video. You can talk about music groups and television shows and everything on this. It's an astonishingly well put together. And well thought, I am not a 15-year-old girl.
No, but I know
okay.
what you're going to be doing this afternoon.
Exactly right. I'm going to be sitting down with my 15-year-old girl and saying, you want to play? You play here.
Yeah,
I can tell you a quick story here, Jeanette. My daughter, when I got her a computer, she said, well, Dana, you know, it's time for me to have a computer. And I agreed with her. But I told her, you're going to get a computer, but you're going to get Linux on it. Because what I do all day long is manage Windows machines, and I'm not going to do it when I get home. And then, you know, for another year, I think it was, she bugged me about getting instant messaging. And I finally said, all right, but you're going to be on my instant messaging server at work, and I reserve the right to go in and look at whatever you're sending to your friend. I haven't done that yet, but I reserve the right to do it.
She didn't hear that. She didn't hear that you haven't done that yet.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
We do that every day, Amelia.
She's a 15-year-old kid, and it's not even noon. She's not even up yet. And when she is, she's not listening to me unless mom's got it on. Mom, turn the radio off. Yeah. But yeah, she's a good kid. I don't have to. And I want her to think I've never looked.
Yeah.
And that I never will look. But this provides that same kind of safety that, you know, I'm struggling to provide for my daughter. This provides that same kind of safety for every kid, for parents who are not computer savvy. And they've put it all together and made it and packaged it up and made it interesting and fun. And I can't imagine a kid who doesn't want to sign up for this. This is great. Jeanette, you've done every parent in America a great service. And as one of those parents, I humbly say God bless you and thank you.
Well, thank you.
This is great. And I hope that, yeah. I hope this continues forever. And I hope somebody listening is some sort of corporate interest
and
in watching.
And if there's any way
to
get this out to more folks, you know, this is the type of stuff that we've been preaching for years.
Yep.
For folks, you know, to be able to let their kids safely and soundly go, that has been lacking.
Well, and it's viral marketing. You get one kid in an area to sign up, they're going to tell their friends.
Yep.
And that's how it spreads. How long has this site been up?
We've actually been up just a little over 6 months.
Oh, good. Then we're not too far behind the times then.
No. You know, it wasn't too accessible when it was my kids and the neighbors.
This is astonishing, Jeanette, and I'm very, very impressed. And again, for every parent, I thank you. This is terrific.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, we're really excited because it really does, you know, let every parent get what they need out of their kids being online at the same time as letting the kids have fun and learn and explore bit by bit on their own.
Right, exactly. So if you've got kids who are beginning to want to get into the social networking online, imbe.com, imbe.com. Jeanette Simons, who was kind enough to, A, come on the show and talk to us, and B, more importantly, put this thing up.
Plus, we're getting the word out, helping her try to get the word out, because, you know, I mean, we reach all the way, even though we're here in Rochester, we're reaching out to Buffalo, Syracuse, and all the way into Canada.
And remember, we're big in the Netherlands.
Down the Pennsylvania.
All right, Jeanette, thank you so very much. Once again, God bless you for this. Jeanette Simons, let's hear it for her, ladies and gentlemen. All across America, people are applauding. Going to take a quick break, back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
Go. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbite. Now, every week on Soundbite, we do a poll. This week's poll came from something that I read on the web.
It must be true.
So it must be true. The percentage of threats arriving in emails that rely on links to malicious sites rather than arriving as file attachments has ballooned tenfold since the first quarter of the year. In a report published Thursday, UK-based Message Labs Limited said that 35% of the email threats that now detect use embedded links to infect computers instead of the more traditional file attachments. In the March-June timeframe, that figure was 20.2%, said the company. And in the opening quarter of 2007, a mere 3.3% of the intercepted threats carried links. The links, so now it's 35% of the email. The link, said Paul Wood, a Message Lab senior security analyst, lead unwary users directly to malware downloads or increasingly to purposefully crafted sites that support malicious JavaScript code. The volume of attacks using attachments has diminished over the last 18 months, while the number using links has shown a massive increase. Message Lab's data jibes with recent analyses by other security vendors, which have all noted the rapid increase in web-based attacks, often from legitimate sites that have been compromised by criminals. The bad guys know that most people learn not to open attachments. Email is still the preferred attack vehicle for getting their message across, but now they're using links. They know people still follow links. So our question of the day is, I click on links in email, not really a question, only after I verify the sender, only if I think I know the sender, only if it looks interesting, only if I'm bored, only never, or only all the time. Woo! So far, we've got about 80 people who have voted, 82 actually now. And so far, only if I verified the sender, 44% of you have lied, have said, followed by only never, and only 3 of you have said only if I'm bored. When you're done giving us your opinion, please feel free to check out the little yellow box underneath. If you click on give us your opinion, it takes you to my website, AskNick.com. AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Hey, that's quite a voice you've got there. You ever think about doing radio?
No, but thank you very much anyway. I appreciate that.
And then that can take you to my website where you can enter your opinion up to 255 characters. And while you're there, check it out. I do a newsletter. I do forums. You can search my old questions and answers and the whole newsletter, the rants, the raves, the tips, the tricks, all the other stuff. Pretty interesting place. Only $15 a year, and I can't imagine why you wouldn't do it. But then come back to the Soundbite site and check out all the complete whack jobs who hang with us. In the Soundbite chat room just a minute ago, Rachelian, I don't know how you pronounce that, said the interweb, where men are men, women are men, and teenage girls are FBI agents. We all got a chuckle out of that. Thank you very much. And now we are, I think, back to the phones. Our next caller is Shelby on a cell phone. Welcome, Shelby. What's your question? Shelby, are you there? We have no Shelby. All right, we have lost Shelby. Our next caller is Paul, also on a cell phone.
Shelby, are you there? Are you there?
Shelby?
Hello?
Hello.
Who's this?
Oh, hi.
Shelby.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I have a Mac question.
Is this Shelby?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm running 10.4.10. And I'm getting a blinking screen when I try to open hard disks and folders. I've done the security updates, tried to trash the plist file and multiple other things, and I can't get it to work. And I'm trying to avoid reinstalling the operating system.
What do you mean by blinking screen? The whole screen blinks? What,
yeah.
And what color does it blink?
It doesn't blink any color. The icons all disappear, and it refreshes the Finder.
Oh, okay. So the screen isn't blinking. The Finder is crashing.
Yeah.
The Finder crashes and relaunches.
Yeah.
And you can usually tell that by the black triangle under the Finder icon will disappear and then reappear. So that means the program itself is quitting and then relaunching again. Typically, you do delete the Finder preference file, run the repair permissions and repair disk. So it sounds like there may be something wrong in the Finder.
Yeah, I've done all that. Maybe
something in the font cache. Have you run the Unix maintenance scripts?
A few of the scripts, yeah.
There's the maintenance scripts run in Unix at night, and most people don't bother with them, don't bother to know about them. There's a couple of programs like Cocktail and Mac Janitor. Onyx is another one that will run those scripts for you.
I know.
Deleting font cache is also a big one.
Deleting
the Finder font cache. So it sounds like you've done pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Do you have another computer that might happen to be running the same system version? Because you can try reloading just the Finder application.
I have OX 10.4.10 server running, but not the regular Mac operating system.
Yeah.
When I download Onyx or other utility programs, expand them, mount them, and then try to get into that mounted disk, it blinks, and I can't get into them.
Okay, it's not blinking, it's quitting.
Yeah.
Do you have another username?
No, I don't.
Try creating another username and seeing if the same problem exists in the other username. That will let you know if it's a user-level problem or a system-level problem.
Okay.
And if it does turn out to be a system-level problem, you know, probably an archive and reinstall is the best bet there.
Yeah, all right, that's what I'm trying to avoid.
Yeah, that's sort of the last step. You've done everything ahead of that. If a new username works, fine. Move all your stuff to the new username and then delete the old username.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a good idea to have a second username lying around.
Just in case.
Yeah, keep an administrator user that you don't use and then run as a standard user, and that can help cut down on issues later.
For God's sake, put passwords on both of them.
Yeah.
Definitely.
All right.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Shelby. Our next caller is Paul, also on a cell phone. Welcome, Paul. What's your question?
Hi there. I have a laptop, and I purchased a program called Rojack.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how secure that is. It's far, not secure, but as if someone took my laptop, how good it works to track the laptop down.
Well, it's probably pretty good at tracking the laptop. Getting it back is the next question.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, the theory behind this, and it's like a $50 thing.
A year.
Yeah, a year, right. What it does, basically, is it phones home. Right? So if the person, I guess, never puts you on the network...
Right.
It's never going to find you. But if it actually gets put on the network, then they can track where it is and call some sort of law enforcement officials. And
you right.
know. When LoJack for Cars first came out, I remember reading in an interview with the developers and you know, they had to call up the police and said, you know, our client's car was stolen and we know exactly where it is. Can you go arrest the guy that stole it? Well, if you know where it is, how can it be stolen?
Yeah, right. You know, and the nice thing, I guess, is that if your computer is not recovered within a month, they'll give you a full refund for the purchase price of the software.
They'll give you $50 back.
Yeah, right.
But the thing that is, though, is somebody else can literally just, you know, if they're worried about it, just wipe the hard drive out.
That's the problem. Most thieves are stupid. We've got the great story from Dan Raskas, if he still listens. He had his computer stolen. 2 years later, someone tried to sell it back to him.
Yeah.
I've got this used computer you might want to buy. It still had all of his data on it. It was still named Dan's computer. Had his voice as the error beep. You know, the thieves are stupid. They don't know.
Yeah. That's true. And this product works for... the Mac, it works for XP, it works for Vista. It says universal as well. I don't know if that means it'll work under...
Intel Macs and PowerPC Macs.
Right.
That's universal is their flag for that.
Oh, all right, there you go. But it sounds like a pretty good deal, you know. And for $50 a year, that's not so bad. Of course, you can buy multiple years at a slightly lower price, so...
Right. Yeah, as long as you can be running behind the scenes, hidden... They don't know that it's there.
There was just a case recently, in the last couple of days... A lot of the Mac laptops and now a lot of computers in general come with webcams built in.
Right.
And this guy had written a program that whenever he took a picture with his webcam, it automatically uploaded to his Flickr account.
Right.
So when his computer was stolen, whoever stole the computer or whoever ended up with it was playing with the webcam. And so the thieves' pictures started showing up on this guy's Flickr account.
Cool.
And you just with enough pictures, you find out who it is and the background and where they are. And
Anyway, it sounds like an awfully good deal, Paul. Thank you so much. Our next caller is Tom from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Hello. I have a IBM ThinkPad T30 laptop.
How do you like it?
Oh, I like it very much. And, you know, I just, you know, my production machine, actually, it's, you know, it's, but, you know, I didn't have a lot of memory on it. And it, I know when I'm up to a gig. So I just went out yesterday and threw a gig in it. And the, from 256 meg. Jeez.
Right.
And, but now the system's reporting back on our system properties is reporting back 512 megabytes instead of the gig. Is that just the limit of the operating system?
No, you may have got the wrong memory for that specific model computer. There's a chip density issue involved. They can make a 1 gig chip with 16 small chips or 8
Did
big
you buy
chips.
Two or one chip?
I bought two 512.
Okay, that's another issue. One of the 512s may be bad.
Or it might not be seated fully.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I reseated them. That's what I thought made it went with my... But I had two chips in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was worried about one of those channels, what it's sitting on is being shot or something. Mm-hmm. Versus
swap the chips and see.
Yeah.
There may be a way, it depends on your BIOS, there may be a way to see which slot it's recognizing the RAM in rather than just total RAM.
Because like Steve was saying, you got two possibilities. One, you could have a bad chip by switching the chips, that'll tell you there. But you could have possibly a bad socket.
That's what I think.
So the best thing to do is try switching the memory and just see if it sees, again, if it comes up with either the 512 or the 1 gig. And otherwise, you're going to need to have the system tested, and you might have a bad sock.
Well, that's what I think is going on. That's why I think often it was running slower, and often it was reporting 256 megs, and I thought I had more in that than there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think I just lost one the socket. Yeah. Well, I'll try switching it out again and see what happens.
There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tom. Good luck. Our next caller is Jack from Waterloo. Welcome, Jack. What's your question?
Okay, I'm running XP with Firefox 2.0.0.7. Whenever I bring up a website, it opens that website, but also opens two folders that says Mozilla Firefox 2.007 release notes. And I can X them out, they go away, but then when I go back to another site, it opens those two folders again. Is there any way I can get rid of them?
Well, that's interesting.
There's an issue on the Mac with Firefox installation where people don't finish installing it. It just loaded the installer image. And then when you click on Firefox, it mounts that image again. So maybe that's what's happening.
Are you on a Mac or a PC?
A PC.
They just changed their installation instructions on the PC, too, where you actually have to run the install rather than drag
the
file.
Well, I'm wondering if he's got any of the buttons up on top. You know how sometimes you can click one of the help buttons and it'll
open the help window, yeah.
I'm wondering if one of the buttons along the top might have been pressed so that when you start it up, it's opening not only Firefox, but one of those additional windows.
Right. The other thing that I might suggest is that you export all your bookmarks.
Okay.
Wipe out your installation of Firefox. Reinstall it with the newest version, making absolutely sure that you've actually finished the install.
Okay.
Right? I don't mean wipe it out. I mean uninstall it correctly.
Uninstall it, right.
Right. And then import all your bookmarks again.
Okay.
That's where I would go with that, because with Firefox, the only really important part, well, there's the password cache, but theoretically you know your password. It would be best to just back up. The only important part is really the bookmarks. So back those up by exporting them and then reinstall and then import them back again. You should be all right.
We'll give it a shot.
Go for it. Let me know.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next caller is Mike in Parenton, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Yes, a real quick one. I am running XP Professional on a laptop, and for some reason when I go into my add and remove programs, it will only display maybe a dozen or a dozen and a half of the items in there. If I do it by alphabetical or by date, no matter what, it only displays about half a dozen of them, and I know there's a gazillion more of them, and I don't understand why it's not showing me everything so I can remove what I want to remove.
Well, most of what you want to remove, Microsoft doesn't want you to remove, so they don't give you the option to do so.
No, I'm talking about I've got a lot of applications I've installed on the machine, and I can't get past
There's a checkbox there for show sub update, so if you get like five updates to Norton, it only lists it as one line.
Right. But what he's talking about is programs that don't go into add remove programs. There are three or four reasons for that to happen. One is the programming. They're just lousy programmers. If that is the case, the theoretically should be in the folder under start. You know, every program creates their own folder under start.
Yep.
There should be an uninstall link there. If not, there should be something in the application.
Like, I can't even see, like, WinZip because it's a W. I can't see...
you can't scroll is what you're saying.
I can scroll, but there's nothing visible. The scroll bar is very thin, which means there's a lot of things to scroll to.
Right.
But there's nothing beyond the first page. It's just empty space, and nothing is selectable. I can't put my mouse on it. So it's like literally, it seems that there's a lot there, but it doesn't show me anything.
What I would suggest you do is hold on, and we'll talk to you when we come back from the break, and we'll give you an answer to that. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, Mike from Parenton, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 40 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, this is Soundbite. Can I get some echo? No, okay.
Excellent.
He wasn't even apologetic about it, just no.
Yeah, hang on, let me get that for you.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Don't hold your breath.
Going back to the problem that Mike, are you still there? Mike?
Yes, I am.
Yes, he is. All right, there's a couple of things you can try. One is a BrickBat. there's a file called sysoc.inf, sysoc.inf. It's in the INF directory under the Windows directory. You can open that file with Notepad, and you should see a list of programs, most of which will be followed by the word hide. If you delete the word hide and resave the file, you should be able to see them in add remove program. Now, there's also a place in the registry.
Which we don't recommend.
Which we don't recommend, but there is an uninstalled section under current version under Windows, blah, 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 where each application has an entry, and there are some D words, and if one of those D words is no remove, if that's set to one, then you won't be able to remove them, but that's assuming they do, in fact, show up on the list. The other thing we might suggest is the good old standby of the Security Tango.
I run that all the time.
Okay, then that's not the problem. But I would try that other thing. It may well be that what you need to do is install Windows on top of Windows, because that would, there may be a corrupted file in there somewhere.
If I do that, will I lose all the applications that are already there?
Not if you do it right, and Dave can tell you how to do it right. But he's not going to.
He wasn't listening.
He was playing on the computer. He was not paying attention.
Well, see, now that he's got his new car,
saying.
He's not surfing for his...
No, he was there. He was there in that same forum again earlier. Yeah, he was.
Back here on this chat, trying to find out something else, because he's going to back to another
file. We don't care about that right now. What we care about is Mike's problem of he might need to reinstall Windows over Windows.
And it's right there on our website. I've got the step-by-step instructions on how to do it. But it's basically putting the CD in, going through it, and the first time you see repair, you ignore that. So you go past that, you hit the install. After you hit the F8, again, you will then see install or repair. At that point, after you've hit the F8, you select repair then, and it will put Windows over Windows.
I've seen
some. And again, I've got that on our website that you can quick print
off. Under Dave's tips from July 2003. I've seen some Windows installs that are so corrupted, you never get that second repair option because it doesn't know Windows is there, so it can't repair it.
In this case, that shouldn't be the problem.
Sometimes we've had to literally pull off folders. We've had to take the hard drive out, put it on our test bench, move stuff out. But
all right, we're going to... Thank you.
Good luck.
Let
us know how you make out on that, please.
Our next caller is Karen from Webster, New York. Welcome, Karen. What's your question?
Good afternoon, guys. I just have a question on the... What is the difference between the Intel Dual Core 2 and the Intel Dual Core Centrino?
One is a chip, one is a marketing line.
Yeah.
The Centrino is a marketing line that consists...
Or the laptop.
That's mostly laptop chipsets.
Right.
It's a combination of the CPU, the Wi-Fi chip, the motherboard chipset. So it's oftentimes used interchangeably, but there is a technical difference.
Right, and the big difference between Centrino is it's usually used in laptops because it also includes the wireless
for the mobility,
connectivity
and
everything else.
Exactly.
The Bluetooth and...
Right, so that's
I ordered
part of
a laptop, okay, from Dell, and I specified Centrino, and it came with the dual core. Not the Centrino.
That's okay. I mean, you still got the wireless.
As long as there's some sort of wireless in there, it doesn't much matter.
Okay.
The Centrino, though, has better support for Bluetooth items, which you probably won't get into.
Right.
If you're just doing everyday service.
We're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 49 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 53 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbite. Really quickly, before we get back to the phones, I do want to do this one last news item. Microsoft Excel 2007, the brand new one, is going to have to relearn part of its multiplication tables. Microsoft employee David Gaynor has said in a blog that when computer users try to get Excel 2007 to multiply some pairs of numbers, and the result is 65,535, Excel would incorrectly display 100,000 as the answer. Gaynor said Excel makes mistakes multiplying 77.1 by 850, 10.2 by 6425, and a bunch of others. Further testing showed a similar phenomenon with 65,536 as well. He said Excel was actually performing the calculations correctly, but when it comes time to show the answer on the screen, it messes up. I don't know what the difference is as far as the user is concerned. But Gaynor said the bug is limited to six numbers from 65,535.99999995 to 65,535 and five numbers, six numbers from 65,535.99995 to 65,536. And that Microsoft is working hard to fix the problem. So for those of you who would prefer to use an accurate spreadsheet program, you might want to take a look at OpenOffice. Oh, and by the way, IBM has released Lotus.
Again?
The Lotus Office Suite is free now.
Cool.
It's in beta right now, but they're working on it. All right, our next caller is Mike from Webster. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
I'm considering buying a new iMac.
And
Steve has helped me in the past, so I know he'll know the answer to this. Supposedly there's a new operating system or an update to the current operating system, however you want to call it. Should I just wait till that comes out and it comes preloaded from Apple on the machine?
That's always the question. There's two or three questions there. There's a lot of rumors about an update to the current 10.4.11. And then the upgrade to Leopard, which is probably going to be 10.5, is a major upgrade. All Apple has said is October.
What year?
Yeah, they have said 07, so October of this year. The fact that they haven't announced a date yet almost, to me, implies maybe it's going to be the end of October. But even then, the basic answer to your question is, can you afford to wait? Do you need a new machine now, or can you afford to wait a few months?
I can wait. I've got an Apple. It runs perfectly.
Yeah, even if they announce Leopard now, it's not going to be bundled in new computers for several months because they have to change the entire manufacturing line.
Okay.
What they've done in the past, there's no guarantee they'll do it in the future. How does that slogan go on all those financial things?
Right. Past performance is no indication of future past.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. What they've done in the past is, if you buy an operating system or you buy a computer that has what becomes the old operating system, within 30 days or so, you'll be able to get an upgrade for like $20 shipping and handling. Then for a few months, the new version is going to be thrown in, they call it a drop-in pack, to the existing model. So you'll get 10.4 installed on the computer and a 10.5 disk. Then, as soon as they replace re-engineer all their production lines, you'll get 10.5 pre-installed on the computer. But we don't know how long that's going to take. It may be a couple of months after the release. So it's kind of that catch-22. If you buy a computer now, you're going to get an operating system. You're going to get a couple of months' use out of it before you can decide if you want to buy the new version of the system anyway.
So there you go.
There you go. We got time for one more. Very fast, very fast. Mark from Rochester. Quick, what's your question?
Yes, how you doing? When I run a window washer program that I have, I see a little item. It's called Dr. Watson with a network icon right next to it.
Yeah,
that's
a program from Microsoft. It was originally designed for when your system crashed, it would actually ferret out what the problem is and send it to Microsoft. It's an acceptable program. It is part of the operating system. It's nothing for you to worry about. That takes us to the end of yet another exciting week with Soundbite. I specifically want to thank Jeanette Simon for joining us and telling us about MBE. If you've got kids, you need to check it out at imbee.com. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, and in particular, the mighty Rob Linton, who has attempted to keep us on the straight and narrow. I'm Nick Francesco. It is 58 minutes after the hour. And thank you for spending yet another week with the greatest computer show in the known universe. We'll be back next week, same bad time, same bad station, with Soundbite on 1180 WHAM. Thanks, and see you next week.